This is the No Dogma podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Eric Bloom, author, keynote speaker, and president of Manager Mechanics. Thank you for joining me, Eric.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Eric, can you tell me a little bit about your background and what you do, please?
Sure. By background, I'm actually a software developer, and then ultimately in IT management. I was the CIO at a couple of asset management firms before starting Manager Mechanics about 6 years ago. Since that time, as you mentioned, I'm a author of a few books, including the one we'll be speaking of tonight, keynote speaker, and my company, Manager Mechanics. We do specialize in leadership development and soft skill, business skill type training.
You were telling me that you have a new book coming out. What's the topic you cover in that primarily?
Oh, thank you for asking. Actually, it's called A Productivity Cocktail, Accelerating Growth Through Productivity. What I found is because I do leadership type training and business training on everything from negotiation to delegation to conflict resolution, we come up with a whole bunch of new and I think very unique type philosophies related to productivity. So I'm looking very much towards pivoting that and adding it to our array of classes, so to speak, going forward. That book should be out in approximately the January timeframe.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, so early next year, you're hoping?
Yes.
So we're going to generally talk tonight about developers, engineers in the workplace. I've read one of your books, which is a kind of collection of your essays from IT World, and a kind of a common theme throughout it is the factors that affect a person's ability to be promoted. Can you maybe discuss a few of those things?
Yes, is that what happens is in order to get promoted, there's a philosophy. Actually, there's a book by that name, not by me, but by another author, called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. So each time in whatever position you're in, whether you're brand new to the workforce, if you're a senior software developer, a business analyst, an accountant, a manager, or even a director level, is that you have to grow as you move up the chain. Like, for example, managing managers is very, very different than managing individual contributors.
Okay, so but are there factors within a company, like let's say the company's size or its industry, that can affect one's ability to get promoted?
Not really. I mean, it's different. It depends a lot on the company itself. Like, for example, is that in some large companies, you would think that it's easier to get promoted because there are many more open positions. But there's also a lot more competition. Additionally, it's easier to get siloed in one particular place. In small companies, you'd say, gee, you know, assuming the company's growing, if it's a fast growth company, then there is more opportunity because there's going to be a need for a lot more managers, a lot more senior people, et cetera, and you can sort of ride it up. The issue with a small company is that unless you can get, for example, what they call an inline promotion, where you are an accountant, a junior accountant, and you want to become an accountant or a senior accountant, is to become the accounting manager, you basically have to wait until the accounting manager leaves or does something different. So, you know, every company has its nuances regarding promotions, you know, for individuals.
What if you're, though, if you're in a company where there isn't really a way for you to go up? For example, there is one or two people above you, but there is no growth within the company, and you are just waiting for someone to go.
Well, you know, you have to do what's best for you, for your profession. In some cases, it just might not be the right company for you. In other cases, is that you may be able to pivot, depend, maybe your manager won't leave, but maybe there's a position in another department that you could potentially move up to. But, you know, particularly in today's world, it's both funny, interesting, and sad that there's much less loyalty between companies to individuals and individuals toward companies. So what I would say is that if you see that, you know, there's absolutely no chance for promotion, either given the politics of the firm, given, your reputation within the firm, or just because of the firm's organization structure itself, is that maybe at some point there's time to look at another company.
I have seen in some larger companies I've been in, though, a scenario where an excellent engineer gets promoted into management. They didn't necessarily want to, but they took that opportunity anyway, and they're not necessarily very good at it, and therefore they won't progress as managers. What does someone do in a scenario like that?
It's interesting you say that because that very often happens within the technology area. I like to call them accidental managers. In effect, what happens is imagine that I was your manager and I was going to promote you into a management position. And I came into your office and I said, Brian, congratulations. Because of the great work that you've been doing, we're going to promote you into a new role. Now, the only thing is, in this new role, you didn't go to college for it. You have no particular training in it. None of the things that you've been doing that's caused you to be successful thus far will be transferable into your new role. Oh, by the way, also, is the reason the position opened up is because we promoted someone into it last year, actually with a job background and skill set very much like yours. The problem is they failed miserably and we had to fire them. Welcome to management. So, you know, that's very, very often what happens. So if you're the individual who's promoted, first make sure that you want to be a manager. Make sure it's the right thing for you. And if it is, understand that management is a skill. So like being a technologist or an accountant or a tester or whatever you do in your individual contributor role, when you move into management, take management classes, read books, watch YouTubes, become a student of your new profession. Because again, as I'll use the expression again, what got you there to be in a manager role may not be the things you need to make you successful moving upward into being a successful manager.
I think you see that particularly with developers. As soon as I have a few friends who have been moved into management kind of half willingly or unwillingly, they don't necessarily like it. They miss their coding and they certainly don't like people. And now they've got a team of 5 or 6 and they can't handle it at all.
Yeah, I had a friend like that. I still have a friend like that. What happened was he was promoted because he was a great techie. He was actually a pretty successful manager and was in a management role for maybe 10 or 15 years, moved up to director at a fairly large staff working for him. And his favorite expression during all that time was management would be great if it wasn't for the people. And eventually what he did was he just threw up his hands. He says, you know what? I'm really not happy doing this management stuff. And went back, retooled himself technically, moved back into an individual contributor's role and loves it. So, you know, when you're trying to decide, should I be a manager or shouldn't I? Should I take this job or shouldn't I? There's no right or wrong. The only thing that makes it right or wrong is if it's consistent with what's in your heart as to what you want to do.
For companies that are, let's say, in the position that they've got a large development team and there are roles available for moving up to team leads, heads of engineering, heads of product, but a person doesn't want to, they want to continue as an individual contributor. What advice would you give to a company for giving a promotional structure to that individual?
I would say is let them be an individual contributor. If they're doing great work, which I assume they would be if you want to promote them, there are lots of people who don't want to be managers. So as a company, what will happen, if, for example, let's say, again, that the say you worked for me. In this case, you were that individual contributor who would like to, and I'm trying to promote you into a management role, and you don't want to do it. Then what will happen is if I force you to take that management role, what will happen is you'll eventually leave because you're not doing what you want to do. So if you put employees in positions they don't want to be in, they eventually vote with their feet and you lose them. So what I would be doing by doing that is effectively losing one of my best techies because of a poor management decision.
For the developers that want to, let's say, move up into management, what advice would you give them?
Actually, it's twofold. One of which is start thinking like a manager now. In fact, we have a class like that. It's called Thinking Like a CIO. So what you should do first of all is start observing your manager. What decisions did they make? Would you have made that same decision? I'm neither saying, you know, stalking or re-guessing second guessing your boss. But what I'm saying is if you're in the position to either observe management decisions made by your boss or other bosses, just sit back and take note that decision was made. And then think about it yourself. Would I have made that decision? Would I have done it differently? Why did that boss make the decision? Another thing you should do is you should start immediately, if you want to move into a management role, immediately start getting management experience. Now, the way you do that is in a number of ways to both gain the skills as well as position yourself to move into a management role. One of them is volunteer. Now, I don't mean in the workplace. I mean for your favorite religious institution, nonprofit, charitable organization, you know, whatever it may be. You know, if you have a great interest and a great love for Special Olympics, Big Brother, whatever it might be, run an event for them. You know, if at your local church or synagogue or whatnot, you really would like to get involved there, offer to run a fundraising event if you want to learn delegation. Because what will happen is if you're, say, running a fundraising event, is that you're going to need lots of people to work for you. So the example I use on this, in fact, it's the opening for one of my keynotes, is I'll say, imagine that your boss walked into your office. Excuse me. Imagine your boss walked into your office and said, because you love your job so much, because the job gives you meaning, because the company, the company's role in both the industry and in the world, you take great meaning and agree to, and you're growing and being fulfilled professionally. Starting tomorrow, I'd like you to work for free with the same vigor, excitement, and loyalty that you've had all along. Now, you think that sounds sort of funny, you know, who would do that? Well, when you run a volunteer organization, say running the fundraiser for your local church, is that's exactly what you're doing. Their payment is based on the other things that they learn, the fulfillment, the being with a cause greater than themselves. So if you can properly manage people and delegate in that environment, then it will give you the skills you need to do it when given the opportunity in the workplace.
So if you pick up those skills, let's say through a charitable or a volunteer organization, how do you then, let's say, tell your company that you are capable of performing that role and showing off, for want of a better term?
Well, what I would do is I would just, you know, hey, how was your weekend? Oh, my weekend was great. I'm so excited. Is that I was running an event for Special Olympics. And, boy, I've been working on it for weeks. I don't know if I told you about it. I actually had a staff of 25 people helping me with it. You know, we had people doing the concessions and people helping the athletes and people doing this and people doing that. You know what? I really like this management stuff. It worked really well. In fact, I'm going to be helping them run another event because this one went so well.
I've been in a few companies where it felt like you had to be a friend of either the head of engineering or the CTO in order to get a promotion. How do you deal with something like that?
Well, you know, the short joke for that would be become friends with the CTO.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say to you is companies that do that, or let me back up a step and say managers who hire their friends, who promote people based on how much they like them, as opposed to who really deserves the promotion. I had a manager like that once. And you know what? It's awful. Because you can bang your head against the wall, you're never going to get promoted. You know, there's an old expression, people join companies and leave managers.
True, true.
And if you have a manager like that, what I would say, and you just know that no matter what you do, you're not going to get promoted, try to take a lateral position out or get yourself out from under that guy.
For the person that, let's say, that does get the promotion, and now they've moved from being an individual contributor to being a manager, what changes for them?
It's actually funny you should say that, because that was the premise of my first book, Manager Mechanics, Tips and Advice for First-Time Managers. And, you know, it starts out by saying, congratulations, you've been promoted. Now you get to manage your friends.
Hmm.
And what you'll find over time is that once you're in the management role, is slowly but surely the relationship between you and your previous friends, I mean, that's going to be friends, but, you know, your previous peers will change. They'll laugh a little bit more at your jokes. They'll ask you out to lunch a little bit less. But if you ask them out to lunch, they'll break plans to go out with you. So because now that you're in a position of authority over them, basically regarding their future raises, to a large extent, you know, their success at the company moving forward, your relationship will truly change. And if you as that manager try to be one of the boys or one of the girls, it's not really going to work because they're looking at you differently.
I have seen a friend of mine being promoted into a managerial position over another team, and there was a lot of resistance because it was, you know, why you? Why were you picked? You're just buddies with the owner.
You know, the answer to that is to say basically, hey, you know what? I didn't make the decision to promote me into this role. The decision was made. I was told to move here. So you can be mad at me if you'd like, but I'm not the one who made the decision to make this happen.
There are sometimes this sort of promotion, non-promotion thing. I've been in the scenario where I get the responsibility for a 6-month project. There's a team of 4 people, but none of them are really reporting to me. It's just that the 5 of us have come together to make a product, and at the end, they'll go back to their own managers. So I have all the responsibility, but I have none of the authority or the power.
Well, let me talk about that from 2 perspectives. The first of which is, that's the standard project management role when you have dotted line resources. So it's your job as the project manager, effectively, to be able to lead without authority. You know, either because of the strength of your personality, or because your knowledge, or because the managers of those people said, hey, you know what, for the next 6 months, you better listen to Brian, you're going to answer to me. So as a result of those things, is that that's why project management is such a tough position. And as a project manager, it's really important that you get the support of the solid line managers of those people reporting into you.
What do you do, though, when, let's say, you've got a difficult team member? It may have been that they were a peer or they might be a new hire. It doesn't really matter. But they're being awkward. They're not doing what you ask. They're being just generally difficult. But they're still doing an okay job. The quality of their work is okay. They're just a pain in the ass.
It's interesting. It depends. If the project is ending in 2 weeks, you sort of just let it go. But if it's the beginning of a project that's going to be 6 months or 9 months long, is at some point you have to sit down and find out, why are they being a pain in the neck? Is it just their personality? Is that they don't want to be on the project? Do they not like you? What you'll find out, and I've just sort of learned this over time, is that if someone isn't doing or acting the way you want them to act, it usually has nothing to do with you. People are generally for themselves, not against you. So if they're being a pain in the neck, maybe that's their personality. Maybe they're really trying to get off the project. Maybe they think you should have had your job leading the project instead of you, and they're somewhat spiteful about it. So what I would do is I would sit down and talk to them, say, hey, you know, we're going to be on this project together for 6 months. I think you do great work. It just appears to me that you and I aren't really seeing eye to eye on some of this. How can we make the best of it? How can we figure it out? You know, that kind of thing. And then try to move that person to be, you know, more in line with the team. Now, sometimes as a manager, you know, management isn't always fun. I mean, if, say, for example, that person's actions towards you, towards the team, is to the point where it's disrupting the work from being done. You know, these people who can, they're like a bull in a china shop. They get the work done, but the collateral damage is so much of a mess that you wish they were never on the project. Maybe you have to move them off the project, given the opportunity.
What are some of the other typical difficulties a new manager might face in their first, you know, few months?
It's interesting. That's like asking someone who just got their driver's license what type of issues they could run in when driving a car. Yep. It's huge. I would say that most of the issues that come up with a new manager, unless it's related to they were promoted and someone else thought they would and there's problems or hard feelings around it, those kind of things. But most of it comes from, with new managers, is that they don't know how to manage you. You know, when I was an individual contributor and had the opportunity to move into a management role, you know, that was a tough decision for me. I was a techie. I was actually a really good techie. That's why they wanted to move me into the management role. And I thought, wow, you know, I went to years of school to learn how to do all this technical work. And now as a manager, I'm just going to be telling people what to do and I'm going to lose all my skills. What I didn't realize until I was in the management role for a while, that managing is in fact a skill. It has its own set of skills and things along that line. So the biggest problem that new managers run into is they don't know how to do the job.
Something I've noticed with quite a few managers, and it even occurred actually during an interview I was having, a head of engineering was saying to me, he was recently promoted, he doesn't like delegating, he doesn't like not being able to code. I presume that's a common enough thing for new managers.
Yes, it is that, you know, delegation's an interesting thing. Like, for example, I'm an only kid. So I never learned to delegate by bossing around my younger brothers and sisters. But as a manager, if you don't delegate, I mean, all the work comes through you. You're the manager of the department. So if you don't delegate and you do the work yourself, what happens is you start to feel upset because your staff isn't working hard and you're like killing yourself day to day to get the job done. The other side of the coin is the people on your team will be resentful that you're doing all the good work yourself. So, you know, as a manager, part of your job is to delegate. So I would go as far to say that if you can't delegate, you can't be a successful manager. So the bottom line is just get over it.
How does someone get over it, though?
I'm sorry?
How do they get over it? How do you take that first step? Let's say, because a common thing might be you might have been the principal engineer on something and you kind of control, you were doing it really well. And now there's someone else who's the principal engineer and they do things differently and you just don't like it.
Well, you know, when there are many reasons specifically why people don't delegate. One is I can do it better than him or him or her. I'll just use him.
Sure.
But I can do it better than him. The next one is, by the time I tell him how to do it, I could have done it myself. The third one is I'm a little control oriented and I just want it done exactly like I have it done. The problem is with any of those or other similar type reasons is by not delegating it, they'll never learn it. Like this time, you could do it faster than they could do it. But you have to look at it as an investment on the one hand, that you're investing your time in them so that they can do it again and again and again in time on their own without you assisting. You know, the other piece of it is that you need to be able to delegate in order to do your job. Because management is a full-time job. I mean, unless you're in a player coach role where you're doing a little of each. And if you spend your time doing the things your staff should be doing, then you don't have time to do your job. From a programmer's perspective, the hardest thing in the world to do is a piece of software that you had developed, that you had built yourself, and it's probably the great job you did on that got you promoted. You know, it's really hard to let someone in and play with your baby.
No, it is, especially if you've been the primary person.
Yes. So what I would say to you is that use it as a teaching moment to someone in your staff. So when you delegate that to them the first couple of times, you're the subject matter expert on that software. So I'm not saying totally remove yourself from it, but I'm saying do it with them the first time to teach them so that they can gain the skill and the knowledge on how the system was built. And then you can slowly phase out of it moving forward. Also, if let's say that I was the director, you were the manager, and you had someone working for you, and I saw that you were doing all of the work that you were doing as an individual contributor, I might just say, you know what, the guy can't do the management job. He's still doing the individual contributor. I might walk in your office one day and say, hey, you know what, doesn't seem you either can do or want to do this management stuff. I'm moving you back to individual contributor and I'm promoting Joe. So you put yourself at extreme risk if you don't delegate.
Something I imagine that changes as well would be that going from an individual contributor to a manager, you're opening yourself up to a world of politics that you might not have seen before.
Absolutely. The best way to consider politics is when you move from an individual contributor to a manager, it's a little bit like getting married. You know, it's still about you, but now it's about the team. You know, the decisions you make at an individual contributor are, what project do I get? Which office or cube do I get within the room? But then when you're a manager, you're making decisions that truly affect other people. So from a political perspective, is that if there's, say, you're moving to a new floor in the building, depending on who politics well, is you'll either have for your team the beautiful view overlooking the ocean or the view in the back of the building looking at the parking lot and the dumpsters. The other thing I'd say is that, take a high school athlete. In high school, they're the best athlete in the school by and large. So they're promoted, they graduate, they go to college. Well, you know what? There, everyone on their college team was the best in their high school.
Yeah.
So the competition gets more fierce. And the same thing again when they move up into the pros. So what happens from a political perspective is you get up into the management ranks, they're better at the politics, and they've been doing it longer than you. So what I'd like to say on that is, again, tying it back to sports, you can't win them all. But with practice, with a little bit of coaching from other managers or your boss of how to deal with the manager politics, over time, it'll increase your winning percentage.
There's a few people I've had on the podcast who've recommended books like Sun Tzu's The Art of War, Machiavelli's Prince, and various other kind of politically savvy, how to become a political maneuver type books, because it does become key as you want to advance. Even if you don't want to take part, by the simple act of not taking part, you are taking part in a way. It's unavoidable, I think.
The one thing I'd say regarding company politics is that, over the course of your career, work friends come and go. Think about it. There's people that you really like that you work with in the past. They or you took a new job and you'd love to see them again, but professional friends come and go. Enemies accumulate. So if you're going to get into the political game, do it from a position of ethics and proper process. Because if you start basically making enemies left and right, it's a very, very small industry, regardless of the industry you're on, particularly with the advent of LinkedIn. It will come back and haunt you.
What do you do, though? I was in a company once where the CEO was a bit of a bully. The CTO was a bit of a bully. So projects that were genuinely terrible and that everyone in the engineering department knew were a waste of time were still being forced to be done. How do you stand up to people who are your superiors who are demanding something, but you know it's just ridiculous or rubbish or wrong?
Well, first of all, it's interesting is that everybody has a boss. You know, everyone thinks that their boss has full control over what's going on. I'll give you an example. When I was an individual contributor, I couldn't wait to be a manager because then I'd make the decisions. You know, who was hired, who was fired, the projects we did, the training that people could go on. And I became a manager. And you know what?
I still
had a boss. If I wanted to hire someone, I had to ask. If I wanted to do something and my boss said no, I had to do what they said. So you know what? I couldn't wait till I was a director. Why? Because then I would be a manager of managers, and they have wider preview, and they have all the, they have full decision making of who works where and when the decisions are made, because I saw my boss making those decisions. So again, I had a boss, and then I became a CIO. And I said, hey, this is great. This is my gig. All right. I get to control IT now. And you know what I realized? I didn't have one boss. I had eight bosses. Every organization that I supported, in fact, had input into my performance review. So, you know, are we peers or are they my boss? So as you're thinking, if your boss gives you this really just lousy assignment to do and can't really explain to you why it's important for you to do that assignment, maybe the reason is because he thinks it's stupid too, but his boss is telling him to do it.
No, that's fair enough. I think it's only when you get to be CEO, chairman of the board, and president that you maybe don't have a boss.
You know, I'm gonna give you a quick one on that. A friend of mine was the president of a high tech firm. It was still being venture backed. It was maybe 200 people in it. Maybe 30 or 40 of the people reported to him. And as the president, what he really wanted to do, which the chairman of the board did, was they had monthly meetings with the, you know, stockholders, but, you know, the VC community that we had invested in them, basically saying the sales forecast, the profitability, all these things. And my friend really wanted to do that. And his boss would never let him because he wanted experience in front of the VCs and just to learn how to do that. It's a different skill set, you know, answering the Q&A, et cetera. So here is that his boss hated doing it, but just made the decision that she didn't want him to do it because if he got too cushy with the VC people, that maybe if there was ever an issue, that she would be removed from her position. So even at the most senior level ranks, you have bosses.
No, fair enough. In your book, you have a chapter titled Managers Live in Fishbowls. Can you tell me about that one, please?
Well, I thought that that was, you know, quite obvious what that meant.
Absolutely.
What that means is that as a manager, people that work for you are continually observing you. Everything you say, they're going to analyze 100 different ways. Think of it with your boss. Your boss walks by and says, oh, yeah, well, I hope that next project works out better. What is your boss saying to you? Saying, well, you know, that he or she was unhappy with their performance on the job, that maybe it means they'll get more funding, maybe they didn't like you. I'm going to give you a really sort of fun example of this one. Let's say, the president of the company is on the 15th floor, gets in the elevator, comes down to the 10th floor where you happen to work, and you get in the elevator. And, you know, that 30 seconds till you go down, and the president's sitting thinking, all right, what am I going to say to this guy? You know, I'm in the elevator with him and says, hey, I know that you were working on that new budget system. How did it go? You know, how do you think it's going? This is what, and you say, well, you know, I thought it was a really good job. We got it in on time. And then the president says, yeah, I was speaking to the CFO on it. We did it with this last round of budgeting and they really liked it. You know, I was hoping I'd run across one of you guys working on it because that system probably saved us tens of thousands of dollars and was just a pleasure to work with. Keep up the good work. I'm really proud of you. Then they get out of the elevator. They walk their different ways. The president is saying to himself, I really hope that's who I thought it was. And the individual, you know, the person who was in the elevator with him will be saying, my God, the president knows who I am. Does this mean that I'm up for promotion? You know, he said I should continue doing good work. Was that a hint that if I continue good work, there's great things for me here? And we'll be analyzing that conversation for days when it was really meaningless or close to meaningless for the president who had stepped into the elevator. So what it means is that as a manager, if you usually have your door open and now just because you're fighting the flu and you don't want to get everyone sick and you close your office door all day, they may say, gee, why is Brian's door closed all the time? Maybe there's a layoff coming. Maybe he's looking for a new job. So people read into things that aren't there. So just know that as a manager, everything you say is being guessed, second guessed, and third guessed. So you have to really be careful and watch the words you say when speaking with your staff.
I recall once at one of the companies I was in, there was a very sort of abrasive head of engineering, always had a wisecrack. You know, if you said, how are things, he'd have something to say that wasn't the norm. One day, one evening, I remember getting eye contact with him and saying, hi, and he looked away. And I thought, oh, something's up, layoffs or something. Next day there were layoffs. You know, that kind of stuff leaks out. Like you said, it's a change in behavior. I was watching. I noticed it. No one else knew. And then it came the next day.
Yeah. Well, you know, regarding layoffs, let me say, is I've been on all sides of that. I've told managers that they had a, give me a name.
Yeah.
You know, I've laid people off directly. I've been laid off. And you know what? It is a miserable process for all involved.
Yeah.
You know, I said to someone very honestly, there was one person in particular, I told him, and I meant it, I would have rather been laid off myself than had to lay this person off. Because when you lay people off as the manager, it's a business issue. I had 10, 20% reduction, now I have 8. For the people who were laid off, it's a life's event.
Hmm. Any final notes before we wrap up tonight, Eric?
Let me see. Not really. I would just like to say it's been a pleasure speaking with you this evening. For any of your listeners, if they have any questions specifically related to it, you know, they can look at my columns on IT World or come to my website, Manager Mechanics. I have a lot of this type of advice there for them, or could contact me directly through info@managermechanics.com.
I'll put up all the links as well.
I'm sorry?
I'll put up all the links on your Twitter and your blog and everything else.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. I'll just throw in another plug for, you know, this book coming up that a lot of this material was from, 52 Great Management Tips. And to keep an eye out if you're interested in productivity, both individual and corporate productivity, is look for my new book come year end on called Productivity Cocktail.
Very good. Eric Bloom, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Stars align, showing through clockwork of time. Perfect and pure and happy to shine, even when the stars align. Still a million, million. Still a million miles. Still a million, million miles. Still a million miles.
Seems like a million miles.
When all the concrete's laid down under the feet of this lonely town, the train in the tunnel goes round. Even when the concrete's laid down, I'm still a million, million miles, million miles from home.
Seems like a million.
I'm still a million, million miles, a million miles from home.
Seems like a million miles.
The opening music was The Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Even When the Stars Align, sung by David James.